and for the next half hour, I'll be reading from the August 18th issue of the Investigative Post on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. This story was updated August 10th with a statement from Penrose. The heavily subsidized $225 million development under construction on the site of the former Memorial Auditorium at Canalside will benefit from yet another tax break not previously reported. That incentive? A 30-year property tax abatement, likely worth millions for the 251-unit apartment building. Typical property tax abatements in Buffalo are 10 to 12 years long. Property tax abatements granted by the Erie County Industrial Development Agency range from 5 to 10 years. No one will say exactly how much the payment in lieu of taxes deal is worth. Empire State Development, which inked the deal with developer Penrose, refused to say. Buffalo Mayor Sean Ryan's administration said it wasn't aware of the PILOT, payment in lieu of taxes assessment, and Taxation Commissioner Jason Schell said he wouldn't be able to assess the value of the incentive until his office performs a post-construction valuation. And Dylan Salmons, the Penrose executive in charge of the project, refused to return emails and phone calls from Investigative Post seeking comment. Campaign finance records show that Salmon donated $3,000 to Governor Kathy Hochul's reelection campaign 1 week before the state inked the pilot agreement with his firm. Empire State Development and State Agency Homes and Community Renewal have also refused so far to honor freedom of information requests filed June 26th for project financing details that would detail what the pilot agreement and other subsidies are worth. The agencies have also not fulfilled a similar freedom of information law request from a group of local developers opposed to the project. It adds up to yet another subsidy for a project that's already received more than $150 million in tax credits, grants, and low-interest loans from the state. The pilot wasn't disclosed. I've never realized that the state could just grant a pilot for local property taxes, said Lawrence Quinn, former managing partner of the Buffalo Sabres and the city's Commissioner of Community Development under Mayor James Griffin. It's pretty scary what they can do. They're imposing that cost on local taxpayers, added Chris Jacobs, head of Avalon Development and a critic of the Penrose project. Deputy Mayor Thomas Baines, in a statement, said Empire State Development did not inform the city it had agreed to a three-decade property tax abatement for the project that also it received no mention in Kathy Hochul's recent press release announcing the project's groundbreaking. At this point, the city does not know the full value of the abatement or the amount of tax revenue that may be foregone over the life of the agreement. Those are important questions, and we believe there should be a mechanism to ensure the city benefits in some way during the years a project is receiving a tax abatement, such as through a dedicated fund or other financial support. In a statement, a spokesperson for Hochul argued that the Memorial Auditorium site sat vacant and generated no tax revenue until the state development agencies, at her request, pushed to redevelop it into apartments and commercial space. They noted that the pilot agreement predated Ryan, but that the Hochul administration has been in touch with every mayor administration the project since 2023. The spokesperson added that campaign donations have no influence on government decisions. 4 days after this story was published, a spokesperson for Penrose sent a statement denying the campaign donations have any bearing on the North Odd Block project. Any political contribution is done consistent with New York State law and Penrose's internal process, Lizzie Lear, a spokesperson for the company, wrote in an email. There is no connection between political contributions and project level financing or approvals. Philadelphia-based Penrose won a state bid in 2023 to redevelop the former Memorial Auditorium site, which was demolished in 2009. Original plans called for a mix of apartments, 251 units, commercial space, and a parking cost of $160 million. In the years since, costs have climbed dramatically, first to $189 million and now to $252 million. Subsidies have piled up also. Last July, Empire State Development quietly approved a 30-year property tax abatement. In a memo outlining the deal, the state agency said Penrose has originally sought a payment in lieu of taxes deal from the city, but noted the city cannot offer a pilot longer than 15 years per local law. That, Empire State Development President and CEO Hope Knight wrote, left the project with a gap in its financial structure. The terms of the agreement are sparse. Penrose, according to the memo, will pay $115,460 in payments in the first year of the agreement, which begins when the building is complete. Three quarters of that total, $86,595, will go to the city, and one quarter, $28,865, to Erie County. In each subsequent year, the payment amount will increase by 3%. Annual payments at the end of the deal will be around $500,000. The ESD memo contains no other financial information. It includes nothing on the projected assessment of the building, the building's estimated tax bill, or the tax savings to Penrose. Other payment in lieu of taxes inked by the city or industrial and development agents all include such information. Recently opened downtown apartment buildings of similar size offer some clues about what a pilot could be worth. Simonelli's real estate project at 201 Ellicott Street has 202 affordable apartments and is valued at $15 million. That project received a 15-year payment in lieu of taxes agreement from the city based on the building's annual rent income. Project budgets attained by Investigative Post outlined the terms of the deal, which currently saves similarly more than $150,000 annually in tax payments. The firm will save about $2 million over the course of the agreement. The Krog Group's redevelopment of the Trico building at Ellicott and Goodell Streets into 243 market-rate apartments, meanwhile, carries an assessed value of $45 million. That building also has a pilot through the city for a 12-year term. Data obtained from the city shows that deal will save the developer about $7.4 million in tax payments over the course of the agreement, an average of $16,000 per year. An ESD spokesman said Penrose pilot payments, like the Simonelli project, will be based on the annual rent brought in by the apartment building. That revenue could factor into the building's assessed value, but additional information is needed to determine what the building's worth is, how much its full tax bill would be, and how much the pilot deal is saving the company. Drivers beware. Police are tracking your movements. 20 local police agencies have installed license plate readers and conduct thousands of searches a week of motorists, Cheektowaga in particular. Officials say the technology helps them fight crime, but critics call it unwarranted surveillance. This piece is from a July 16, 2026 article by Dale Shoemaker. Imagine you live in Kenmore and need to swing by the Walden Galleria in Cheektowaga. As you drive, a dozen AI-powered license plate reading cameras track your vehicle's movements. The make and model of your car, its color, your license plate number, even your bumper stickers are captured and stored in databases accessible to police locally and around the country. That drive isn't an isolated incident. 19 license plate readers will track a driver traveling from downtown to the mall and back home to Buffalo's west side. A trip from Amherst to watch a Sabres game at KeyBank Center involves a half a dozen camera captures from Clarence to a Bills game in Orchard Park 3. You have no way of opting out. The cameras are everywhere, and there are no laws or regulations, save for local policy governing how law enforcement agencies place license plate readers or call the data they obtain. Across Erie and Niagara counties, law enforcement agencies have installed hundreds of license plate readers. They record vehicles on highways and main thoroughfares, on college campuses, near parks and public housing complexes, and in parking lots of malls and other shopping centers. In Buffalo, they tend to be located in low-income neighborhoods. In the suburbs, they're more frequently placed near shopping centers and along major highways. Many of the license plate readers are leased to local agencies by Flock Safety, a rapidly growing tech company that manufactures one of the most popular brands of license plate readers. The ones in Buffalo are made by Canadian firm Genetic. Over the last year and a half, local police agencies have made more than 218,000 searches of data obtained by the Flock license plate readers. Police say they're using the technology to find stolen cars, locate missing people, and solve crimes. In Amherst, for example, Captain Greg Huller said the town has seen a significant increase in stolen vehicles, and detectives have been actively using Flock to locate stolen vehicles or vehicles associated with larcenies. This has been the most common type of search, though we also use it for other types of crimes. But an analysis of Flock data by Investigative Post found they're often not specific about why they're searching for a particular vehicle. In some cases, police use those cameras to track down migrants wanted by the federal government. This strikes me as a massive sort of dragnet surveillance system that is recording the location of anybody who happens to pass a Flock camera 24/7 constantly, said Jonathan Maines, senior counsel at the MacArthur Justice Center, whose research and litigation focuses on issues stemming from government surveillance. I think it's a massive invasion of privacy to be compiling a database of people's movements. People are using the cameras nearly every minute of the day. Officers with 20 local agencies and Investigative Post found searched for a vehicle in the Flock network of cameras more than 218,000 times over a 17-month period from January 2025 to the beginning of June of this year. That equates to a license plate search every 3 minutes. That count doesn't include Buffalo Police searches of its 116 Genetic license plate readers. It's just not local police that search the local cameras. Thousands of law enforcement agencies have installed more than 6,500 networks of Flock cameras across the country. Police in Western New York share access to their networks with hundreds of other departments, and they, in turn, have access to thousands of networks themselves. This story is based on an Investigative Post analysis of millions of Flock searches performed by police here and around the country. Some of the data came via an open records request made by Scott Conway, a Town of Tonawanda resident concerned about the use of the technology, while other data was obtained via a website that compiles public records requests for Flock data around the country. In the Buffalo suburbs, where Flock is used most intensively, residents beginning to speak out against the constant surveillance. It's a panopticon that is and will continue to be abused, said Conway, the Town of Tonawanda resident. I think there is nothing inherently wrong with the technology, but I think that strong oversight is required to use it without compromising fundamental civil liberties. In an interview, Flock spokesperson Paris Lubel disputed the company's cameras on the track of a vehicle's movements. He did not dispute, however, that an officer could trace a driver's path if their vehicle is captured by multiple Flock cameras. The license plate readers work by taking a point-time image of a vehicle in public view. After that picture was taken, you don't know if the vehicle turned left, if it turned right, if it stopped somewhere. Between January 2025 and June of this year, 20 local police agencies in Erie and Niagara County conducted more than 218,000 vehicle searches using the Flock surveillance system. That's an average of 423 searches per day. None use the system more than Cheektowaga Police, who have queried the Flock system nearly 48,000 times over the past 17 months. The town has 29 cameras installed and two more on the way. On its Flock transparency website, the town reports its cameras have captured nearly 545,000 license plates in the last month alone. Other heavy searches include Erie County Sheriff's Office, police in the towns of Hamburg and West Seneca, and the Niagara Frontier Transportation Authority. You are listening to reading of articles and features from the Investigative Post on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. This piece is from August 17th. The Bill Stadium, what we got for our $850 million. There were plenty of reasons not to like the team's new playground when it was being debated and planned. The finished product, however, is impressive, although costly for fans as well as taxpayers. This piece is by Jim Heaney. The debut of the Buffalo Bills' new stadium a week ago has been the talk of the town. I have some thoughts. If you've been following our work for some time, you know that Investigative Post raised a lot of issues when taxpayer support for the stadium was being debated. Our reporting ran counter to the cheerleading that characterized much of the coverage in our local news outlets. We reported, for example, that stadiums typically generate little new economic activity, about as much as a Target store. That subsidies to build and maintain the Bills Stadium are richer than what taxpayers in New York and other states typically spend. That the stadium design falls short of green standards found in many sports venues. And that the lease has an easier escape clause for the team than most other stadium leases negotiated in recent years. In short, I wasn't keen on the project, especially given that the stadium was going to be built in Orchard Park, not the city of Buffalo, where it could have had more benefit to the community. With that in mind, I headed to the stadium last weekend to take in the Bills' open practice. I have to say, I liked what I saw. I was impressed by the engineering and construction. The building is massive. The sight lines and the many small touches, including the numerous concession stands, naming them after city neighborhoods. Concession prices are as high as they are at Sabres games, and in some cases even higher. I mean $19 for a souvenir popcorn or $24 for super nachos. Parking isn't cheap either, starting at about $60 in stadium lots. This past week, a vocal minority of fans have raised a fuss in particular about the size of the scoreboard and seats with obstructed views. The Athletic published a couple of interesting stories that addressed the complaints, along with what is called the stadium's wow factor. On balance, I think the complaints are minor, although if I was a fan who shelled out big money for tickets and a personal seat license only to get a seat with an obstructed view, I'd be plenty upset. If people have a legitimate cause for complaint, it's the cost. Tickets, parking, concessions. The folks I sat with for the open practice are paying $300 a ticket to sit about 35 rows off the field on the 30-yard line. Good seats, but yeesh. I sit 6 rows off the ice for the Sabres and pay $75 per seat. Investigative Post has received several calls from folks with tips on other stadium shortcomings that we're looking into, so I'll reserve final judgment. But based on early returns, I'll stick with my positive first impression. Buffalo Rising wrote about a grassroots effort to turn an abandoned land at Elmwood Avenue in West Utica into an urban playground for adults and kids. The conceptual drawings are interesting. Proponents of Utica Fields envisioned something that would be a citywide attraction for families, artists, musicians, and anyone else that appreciates the idea of a multifaceted urban park that is within reach by a large populace of people. Instead of vacant lots littering with trash, abandoned vehicles, and overall blight, Utica Fields would be a safe, vibrant park where people could gather together to celebrate city living. Buffalo Rising also highlighted a proposal to establish a 5-mile walking and bike path along Riverside and Black Ride and other recreational trails. According to the Trust for Public Land, Black Rock and Riverside are prime for this sort of investment. Both of these underserved neighborhoods would greatly benefit from the investment, which would result in the advancement of green infrastructure, stormwater improvements, tree plantings, flooding and air pollution remediation, and local wildlife benefits. Over the course, the residents living in nearby proximity to the trail would also benefit in what that range from enhanced health benefits, increased property values, environmental stewardship, social engagement opportunities, etc. This is an August 10th Investigative Post article. Buffalo Mayor Sean Ryan, so far, so good. Ryan reflects on his tenure thus far, while Jim Heaney gives a thumbs up following the disastrous reign of Byron Brown, plus a recap of our recent reporting. Off the news. Jeff Kelly interviewed Mayor Sean Ryan at length a couple of weeks ago about his first 7 months in office, and we published two stories last week based on that interview. What I found most noteworthy is Ryan's approach to economic development subsidies. He wasn't a fan of them when he served in the state legislature and isn't keen on them now, with the exception of housing. Jeff wrote, as mayor, the only development Ryan has expressed interest in is subsidizing is affordable housing in the city's neighborhoods. He said his administration is working now towards finalizing a comprehensive plan to address the shortage of quality, affordable housing. He pointed towards state funding for rehabilitation of vacant rental properties he championed as a state senator, up to $75,000 per unit as a start. We think there's 4,000 empty doubles, mostly owned by low-income seniors, he said. We've got to get those back online. They help drive rents down. He also said his administration is aggressively pursuing funding for new builds on vacant city-owned lots in neighborhoods that have been decimated by disinvestment and demolition. He pointed to a $12 million the state awarded the city this year to build 40 new houses. Also striking in Jeff's coverage was the rhetoric of the leadership of the Buffalo Police Benevolent Association, the union that represents the city's roughly 725 cops. Jeff's story refers to the BBA's whining about crime and difficulty recruiting new hires to join the force. To hear the PBA tell it, crime is soaring. It isn't, as evidenced by stats by the police department posted last week on Twitter. Violent crime is down 11% from a year ago, 15% from 5 years ago. As for the difficulty recruiting job candidates, the department doesn't enjoy a good reputation in large part because, one, the PBA constantly complains that being a Buffalo cop is a lousy job, and two, the union goes out of its way to protect bad apples within its rank who give the police a poor reputation in the community. Portraying the PBA has social justice imposters as libtards is not a good look either. As for Ryan, I think he's off to a good start. He did the necessary thing that Byron Brown refused to do, that is, raise taxes to balance the city's books. Ryan was hired well has hired well and is running a much more transparent organization than Brown or Chris Scanlon. And his budget includes money to equip city workers with the vehicles, tools, and materials they need to do their jobs. Stuff like snowplows, police patrol cars, and equipment to fill potholes. I wrote a column in late 2022 that questioned whether Brown was the worst big city mayor in America. Suffice to say, I found him lacking. What's apparent now that he's gone is that Brown was even worse mayor than we realized at the time. Ryan inherited a city hall plagued by dysfunction that's going to take years to correct. The state has thrown subsidy after subsidy at the apartment complex under construction at the former site of Memorial Auditorium. The largesse has generated a fair amount of press coverage, and J. Day Shoemaker found yet another handout from the Hochul administration, a 30-year abatement of property taxes. IDAs typically cap tax abatements in which property owners pay only a portion of what they would otherwise owe at 10 years. The city of Buffalo goes no further than 15 years. Hochul's people only upped the ante to 30 years, but failed to tell the city what it was up to. They're also stonewalling us both an attorney presenting local developers who have raised objections to the project. The Hochul administration has refused to release documents requested under the Freedom of Information Law that detail state assistance to the project. Mind you, these are off-the-shelf records that could and should have been provided in a matter of days. More than 6 weeks later, state officials are still withholding documents. Andrew Cuomo's administration earned a reputation for being slow, painfully, to respond to Freedom of Information requests and otherwise opaque. Hochul's administration is no better. This article is from the August 13th issue of the Investigative Post. This $533 million artillery factory made nothing. The U.S. Army paid General Dynamics $533 million to build a new artillery factory in Texas. It hasn't produced a single usable shell. No one has been held accountable. A robot was on fire, again. It was the summer of 2024, and this cutting-edge robots inside General Dynamics' sweltering artillery factory near Dallas were catching fire with startling regularity, according to four former workers there. This wasn't ideal, as the plant was supposed to be churning out urgently needed artillery shells for Ukraine. The robots, giant metal arms with clamps for hands, would end up drenched in oil, which would then, as no surprise, combust as they moved steel blocks heated to 1,800 degrees into and out of a machine that periodically erupted in columns of fire. One blaze that summer melted a robot's cables, putting it out of commission for a week. Only weeks earlier, defense officials and executives had touted the factory's innovative new machinery imported from Turkey at a gala opening ceremonies. But employees were already used to spectacular mishaps, fiery and otherwise. After the second, third, fourth time, it just became almost normal, said one former worker. It got to the point where I was not surprised by anything that happened there. Instead of producing shells in an efficient and streamlined fashion, the pricey machines kept failing in bizarre ways. The robot arms would swing out of control, smashing into carefully calibrated equipment, and sometimes they would unexpectedly drop hunks of steel down to the floor, 5 feet down. The factory's signature device, meant to precisely stretch the steel for artillery shells, instead often cracked beyond repair. Then there were giant press machines, which required regular pounding with a sledgehammer to function properly, but still botched the shaping of nearly every shell. We really didn't have a standardized practice, Quantel White, a former employee, said. It was just a bunch of guys taking turns going at the machine with a sledgehammer every night. To workers, even the factory buildings themselves came to feel doomed, with acrid smoke hanging in 100-degree heat over foundations seemingly sinking into the earth. The situation never improved. The U.S. Army, which funded the factory, ordered...
Good morning. Welcome to another broadcast day in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, a private, not-for-profit organization. As always...